Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 770. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches and museums, waterfalls and wine, wallabies and the Wilpena Pound, as we go to South Australia and Adelaide. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Adelaide. I'd like to welcome to the show James Schomburg from Adelaide in Southern Australia, who has come to talk to us about the same. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. I'm looking forward to presenting a bit about my home state.
Well, and James is a longtime listener to the show, and I was intrigued as we were talking before the show to find out that he heard about Amateur Traveler apparently from a magazine article that I have never heard of. So that is funny.
Yeah, Wanderlust has given you, which is a great UK travel magazine, it's rated you in the top five podcasters for travel in the world.
Very nice to hear. Yeah. But we're talking about Adelaide today. Let's put it on a map, first of all. Where is Adelaide in Australia?
So Adelaide is in the state of South Australia, and which is in the center of Australia on the south, obviously. It's the only state that's surrounded by all the other states. So Western Australia is obviously West, Northern Territory, Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria all surround South Australia. So it's literally the heart of Australia, but it's probably the least visited of all the states in Australia for overseas tourists particularly.
Well, and let's start addressing that right away. Why should someone travel to Adelaide?
Yeah, look, for me, the reason I love my home city is the lifestyle, the climate, and the varied scenery and opportunities all within such a close distance. It's a very sophisticated city. It's got festivals. It's got a lot of art. But as well as that, it's got beaches. We've got literally 50 kilometres without a break of beautiful white and yellow sand beaches. We've got hills which are 20 kilometres away the other side, which run parallel to the beach, and they're full of waterfalls and wildlife and great wineries. The wine is pretty hard to beat. You know, been rated the winery regions around Adelaide as being one of the best places in the world to taste and drink wine. The food is fantastic, as most wine areas are. The weather, as I mentioned, is fantastic. It has four seasons. We've got very hot summers, very hot, dry summers, but we also have very mild, pleasant winters with some rain, and in between the spring and autumn are fantastic. And I think the thing that people say, well, what separates us from perhaps other cities in Australia is the wildlife. It literally is one place, and I've had it happen to me, where kangaroos have hopped down my street. We have koalas in our trees in our home at times. And I know when I lived in the US, some of the Americans who I met and made friends with thought that that was standard in all the parts of Australia, but it's not. We don't usually have kangaroos hopping down the streets, but we do actually where I live. And that's the great thing, accessing the real wildlife that is so different to any other part of the world is literally in the suburbs, and there's some amazing places that I'm happy to talk about where you can actually access them as well very easily.
Excellent. Well, where shall we start?
Hearing the most recent podcast where you always look for a 7-day itinerary. I've set up a 7-day itinerary of not just Adelaide, but one of my favorite regions that was really just glanced upon by your previous people who spoke about our state quite a time ago, where they mentioned about Wilpena Pound, but they didn't actually talk about it at all. It's part of a very significant range called the Flinders Ranges that I think for me, when I was thinking what is so different and what would really attract overseas tourists to come here and love it, I think they're the two things I'll talk about. So I'll go through an itinerary if that's okay, incorporating a few days in Adelaide and then a few days in the Flinders Ranges.
Sounds good. And for those who don't know, this is our second episode on South Australia, as James was saying. And the last one was episode 377. And that was with Dave and Deb from the Planet D, friends of mine, but they don't know it as well as James does. So I'm looking forward to this. And I'll put a link to that episode in the show notes as well.
That was a great episode. That their trip is going to areas that I'm not going to mention. It's not that they're not beautiful, like Kangaroo Island, but I think there's other parts of our state which certainly overseas tourists, I know from having American friends who've come here, have said this is like nowhere else they've seen. So I'll head into the itinerary. So look, the obvious thing is you're going to fly into Adelaide. Adelaide's 1.4 million people, so it's a large city, not large perhaps by American standards, but it's the fifth largest city in Australia. Mm-hmm. It's quite a long history. It was founded in 1836, and as South Australians will often say, it was the only free state. All the other states were colonised by convicts. These were free people who came primarily from the UK in the first 10 years, but very much so in the 1840s, a lot of Europeans, very strong German influence, hence my name, but a very strong influence of Germanic culture came in the 1840s, and that's reflected in a lot of the architecture, which I'll talk about later, and the wine, I think, as well. It's also just, it was an interesting aside when I did a little bit of research. I thought I'd better do some research on Adelaide. It was also the second place in the world that gave women the right to vote. That happened in the late 19th century. The first place was New Zealand and South Australia before Australia was amalgamated to form one country in 1904. South Australia was its own colony and it was the first place outside of New Zealand that gave the women the right to vote. Where I would start is the central market. You fly in, it's an international airport. I don't think there's any direct connections currently with the US. You'd have to fly into Sydney or Melbourne or Brisbane and then catch a short flight. Yeah, Melbourne's 50-minute flight. Sydney's an hour and a quarter flight. Then there's many flights. But sadly, as far as I'm aware, there's no direct flights in the US currently.
Well, and currently, like so many places we're talking about, you're going to have a hard time getting there at all.
Yeah, that's very true.
Well, so when we say currently, we mean when we get back to the point where you can travel there.
Exactly. Well, we are hearing that our Prime Minister is talking about opening up travel to the US the end of this year once our vaccination rates get up to 80%. We're currently at 34% of the population. But because we haven't had really many significant COVID outbreaks, particularly in our state, we've only had 1 week of lockdown this year and 3 days last year. We've been very lucky and very blessed. But this would be certainly for 2022 and beyond.
Right.
And it will get easier, I hope, each year. When you arrive in the city's very easy. The airport's only a 15-minute taxi drive or 20-minute bus trip into the heart of a city, the central business district. And that's where I'd recommend people stay as well. Adelaide's a very compact city. You can do a lot of walking in the city centre itself. It's a very easy drive. We call it the 20-minute city because everything's 20 minutes away. Even if you do drive, driving other than having to drive on the other side of the road, traffic's not horrific here like it is perhaps in Melbourne or Sydney or Brisbane. It's a lot easier to get around. So I would recommend people to get a hire car. You can use public transport. Certainly within the city, you can just walk. But once you leave the city, it's going to be so much easier to have a car, and it's not hard driving. It's easy.
It is on the other side of the road for those of us who drive on the right, but I haven't found Australia to be a difficult place to drive as long as you remember when you get to that corner to stay to the left. Otherwise, you see those really frightened looks from people as you're heading towards them, I've found. So,
the only time I had problems in the US when I lived there was for some reason, car parks, garage lot.
Sure, yeah.
That is where I had problems. On the open road, because everybody else is doing the same, it's not too hard, but I do have problems when you have to think about which side you had to be on.
I actually have more problem walking down the street because we have a tendency to try and pass people on the right. And when you drive on the left, you have a tendency to do the opposite. And so I'm much more likely to run into someone on the sidewalk than I am in the street.
Yeah, very true. And I've almost been hit as a pedestrian on, was it Robertson Boulevard in LA? I remember that. Luckily, I had a local grab me and pull me back because I forgot I looked at the wrong side and didn't realize the cars come the other way until it was too late. Luckily, she saved my life. So that was good. So I'd start in the heart of a city. In the heart of a city, there's a central market, we call it. It's a fantastic market. It's the largest undercover market in the entire Southern Hemisphere. It is so much fun. The food and the produce is absolutely amazing. You'll get exposed to all the local fruits and vegetables, which South Australia is renowned for because of our climates. We can grow pretty much nearly every fruit and vegetable bar tropical. We get that from Queensland. But the produce, the cheeses, all of the local areas, because they're wine regions all around us, food is pretty much synonymous. So where there's wines, there's olives, so it's fantastic olives, small goods because of the German history, cheeses because we have dairy areas all around us. So it's a great place to stock up for a picnic that you could do later on and for lunch. Also great cafes and for breakfast in the central market, which again, we have a very strong Italian influence in South Australia. So there's some really good coffee to be found there too. So I think it's a great place to get exposed to all the sounds and sights and good smells. It's a beautiful place to walk through. A lot of fun. It's got a lot of positive energy. Hearing all the people shouting at you, trying to get you to buy their bananas at a cheaper price and so on. A lot of fun, and it's a really good place to start. We have in the city itself free tram services. So as I said before, it's great to hire a car, but in the city itself, the heart of a city, most of it you can do on foot. And there's also free trams. We have an outdoor tram service that costs nothing to use, and that's fantastic to get around the city. And what I would suggest people do once they've gone to the market is head to North Terrace, which is the northern part of the city, and it's a very beautiful Victorian era street, large street. It's one of our major streets of the city, and it's lined with Victorian era buildings which house a lot of our museums, our art galleries, and makes for a really great stroll along there. The architecture is beautiful, very solid brick. Interestingly, they used it recently for a movie called Hotel Mumbai, because Mumbai in India and Adelaide were built around the same time. Mumbai is not, most sadly, having been in Mumbai many times, as much as I love that place, the architecture is now looking a little bit old at times. They wanted a city to look like Mumbai, but actually not be Mumbai. And so they filmed Hotel Mumbai, which was the movie they filmed about, sadly, the Al-Qaeda attacks in the Taj Mahal. But they used Adelaide as the site for all of their filming, which, because it is that sort of architecture, so hopefully it gives you an idea of what it would look like. It's beautiful golden sandstone buildings. I would start there going to the Botanical Gardens, which is on the northeast side. The Botanical Gardens have a special place for me because my family actually designed them, but that's not why I'm recommending them. They are very famous. There's a Schomburg Pavilions there, which is named after the family, but it was who created the Botanical Gardens. But they are absolutely beautiful gardens to walk through. One of the largest rose collections in the world. Because of our climate being so Mediterranean, roses are a special feature of Adelaide. So it's a beautiful place to walk through the gardens. It's a nice place to get some fresh air after being in the market. And yeah, it's a really nice place to start your walk. Then heading west along there, this is all by foot. You'd come across next the South Australian Museum, which is all free. All of these, by the way, the art gallery that I'm about to mention, the museum, the botanical gardens, the library, all of these are free. There's no charge to enter them. The South Australian Museum is a really interesting museum. Obviously, it's got the standard fossils and mammals, stuffed mammals, but what really separates it from probably any other museum is it has the largest collection of Indigenous, our Aboriginal art in the world. It's a great opportunity for people to really get immersed in the culture of our Indigenous Aboriginal people. And it just doesn't include South Australia. It has artifacts and museum pieces from all parts of Australia, and it's considered the world's best collection of Aboriginal art and history. So it's a great place for overseas people to really start to understand the culture of our Indigenous people as well.
Well, and my understanding is that if you're listening to this and it's a few years after we recorded it here in 2021, that they may be splitting off that Aboriginal art exhibit into its own museum. So double check that if you're listening to this way in the future.
I didn't know that, so that's interesting. You've done your research as usual. No, I didn't even know that. That's a great idea because evidently we only see about a 20th of the collection ever, and they keep changing it continuously. Mm-hmm. Other than the large canoes, you see a lot of the dugout canoes and a lot of the boats that they used in the north as well. Those obviously too large, but the collection is constantly being changed because they have a lot more there than they can actually fit into our very small museum. Well, it's not small, but small by the standards of what it could actually take. So you keep heading along North Terrace. I would then head to the art gallery. The art gallery doesn't need a huge amount of time. It's a beautiful art gallery in another old 19th century Victorian building. But what, again, would make it different to perhaps other art galleries is its collection of Australian masters. So some of our very famous artists like Hans Heisen, who did a lot of, in fact, the Flinders Rangers that I'm about to talk about, Robert Streeton, as well as European masters, but it has a lot of beautiful Australian artwork, many artworks which are quite iconic to Australians. That's worthwhile looking at, certainly worthwhile looking through, and it is free. The next one's a little bit of a hidden gem, and I think this one is so overlooked. And the next building is the South Australian Library. Now, the library is a nice library. It's just your standard library. However, there is a wing called the Mortlock Wing. Mortlock Wing was built in 1884. It literally looks like you've stepped into a Harry Potter set.
Okay, I see it.
And you're often the only people in there. I know my wife and I went there last year because we couldn't travel and we went for a weekend in the city. And we went in there and we forgot how magnificent it was, and we were the only people in the whole library. And it's two-story, as I said, 19th century. It's full of old books, full of the most beautiful wood and stained glass. It looks like a cross between an elegant cathedral and a library. It's certainly worth a 10-minute walk through just because it is such a beautiful place, and certainly you can get some fantastic photography in there too. You can take photographs in all these places. Obviously, in a library, you have to be quiet. But other than that, it's a wonderful place to walk through. By this stage, I would then head down to the River Torrens. You'd probably be at a late lunch at this stage. And the River Torrens is used to be a very clean river. They are cleaning it up now. And in fact, next year, they're planning to actually create an outdoor swimming pool on the river. But it's very well situated between the north of the city, North Adelaide, the suburb, which is where a lot of the elite people, a lot of very wealthy people live, and the city itself. Beautiful river to walk through, but there's many places along there with the lawns that you could take your picnic that you got from your shopping at the Central Market. Great place to sit down and enjoy a picnic in the sun, enjoy our beautiful weather, and there's plenty of large trees there where you can get shade as well. I would then head over to the Adelaide Oval. The Adelaide Oval, there's a footbridge from the city across the river to the Adelaide Oval, and Adelaide Oval, it's been considered one of the best ovals in the world to visit. It's, again, one of the earliest ovals built for cricket, one of our national pastimes.
Okay, it's oval didn't mean anything to me at first. Okay, we're talking about a stadium. It's okay. Two people separated by a common language. Yep, got it.
So Adelaide Oval's our largest. It's where our two biggest sports are, cricket, which we play in summer, and Australian rules football, which is our winter sport, which is we're into the finals currently.
And my impression with Australian rules football is you ought to go with an Australian who can explain to you the rules.
Yeah. And you still won't understand it.
Okay.
but I will say, when I had, because I teach at uni and we have a lot of American, or we did pre-COVID, we had a lot of American students do their postgraduate study with us. We always take them to the football. And even though they don't really understand it, they love it. It's an exciting game. It's nonstop. It's 2 hours, 4:30 minutes of men without any protection smashing into each other, like American football, but without the protection.
Well, it seems to me that it's closer to rugby than soccer or football, or American football, depending on where you're from.
Yeah, it's a pretty unique sport. It's hard to even, it's probably a combination of all those.
Okay.
You're allowed to kick. You're allowed to kick forward, unlike rugby union, rugby league. It's a real mixture of sports, but one thing for sure is it's a lot of fun to watch. Our stadium, it's got a capacity of over 50,000, and pre-COVID times, it would be full every game. The sound is going to that oval. It's one of those meccas for a lot of Australians will travel to Adelaide Oval just to watch their teams play because it's such a beautiful oval. Sorry, I'll call it stadium. I've got to
get used to calling it a stadium. That's okay. I've got it now.
It is definitely one of the most unique places to watch sport because it was a very old stadium that they've reconverted to be more suitable for the 21st century. And they've created it in such a way that the sound echoes. So it really, you can have 50,000, it will sound like a 100,000. It's a lot of fun. And I would recommend if you get here in the football season, which is April to now, try and get a ticket. You do need to book, pre-book. It is one of the most unique Australian experiences. There is no other place in the world that this sport is played. Try and get somebody you know to help show you. But even if you don't, just go there because the atmosphere is tremendous. It's a lot of fun and it's safe. Unlike I've been to English soccer and in Europe and I didn't always feel safe when I went to those.
So it's safe as long as I'm not actually playing on the field.
That's right. Yes, that's a great way of saying it. Yeah, it's dangerous on the field, safe off the field, whereas I think soccer is often the other way around. But even aside from going during the season and watching a game, one thing that I think is really a lot of fun and I'd highly recommend if you're at all of a mild level of fitness and you haven't got a fear of heights is to do the stadium climb. Mm. And I do call it the stadium climb. So I'm sure it was built around the same idea of the Sydney Harbour Bridge climb, which is quite a lot. So what you do is you actually get harnessed up after a safety talk and then you go up through the stadium, right on top of the top of the stadium, look down over the oval, which is fantastic, and you look back over the city and get fantastic views, as well as when the sun is setting. The great thing about Adelaide, where it's situated, because we're on the south and our beaches, the sun sets on the west side, so you'll get to see the sun set over the ocean. You're that high at this point, you'll be able to see the ocean. So you can see the sun setting over the ocean and over the city. It's a very nice time to go. So I'd always recommend if you're going to do the stadium climb, try and pick late afternoon as the sun is setting because that's when I've done it and it really is special up there.
As long as you don't have a terrifying fear of heights.
Terrifying? No. And look, it's not too bad. I do have a bit of fear of heights.
Okay, good to know.
And I was fine. It's so well set up. The safety is so good. You know, you're locked in so that you cannot fall. There was one time where if you'd like to, and I did for a microsecond, enough to get a photo of me looking scared, they get you to hang off it. Okay. At horizontal, looking down over the oval while you took a photo, trying to look like you're cool. My wife managed to look very cool. I managed to look like I was not so cool, let's put it that way, but it made for a funny photo. But it is a lot of fun. It is very uniquely, as far as I know, it's a unique thing to do, and it's certainly worth it just alone for the views. Then now would be dinner time, and what I would do is head back over the bridge back to the North Terrace, and on the corner of North Terrace and King William Street, which is our Adelaide's in a very much a grid. It's 1 square kilometre. You've got North, South, East and West Terraces, which form the square, and you have a street going down the centre called King William Street. Very beautiful streets.
And I assume that is named after William the Fourth, who is the husband of Adelaide.
Spot on.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Penultimate ruler of England from the House of Hanover.
That's right. No, that's great.
Okay. And Adelaide, we didn't mention this, but Adelaide being named after a German princess. Adelaide of Saxe-Meiningen.
And it's really interesting because, as I said, that was obviously not intentional, but German influence in Adelaide is probably the strongest of any of the cities. And particularly when you hit it, when I talk about we're going on another one of the days, you'll get really exposed to the Germanic influence.
You started to put us at a particular intersection for a reason, and then I interrupted. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. So
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping is always curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. I also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Bar 2KW is, we have many rooftop bars in our skyline in the city, which are really nice. My favorite remains one of the originals called Bar 2KW, and it's on the corner of King William and North Terrace on the top of the roof there, and it's so well situated. It looks back over the Adelaide Oval, over the casino, which we have, over a lot of the more modern buildings on West and North Terrace, which are massive, very expensive, more modern buildings, but fantastic way place to watch the sunset over the ocean in the distance too. And it makes some fantastic cocktails as well. And I think it's a nice way to finish after you've been active up on the rooftop climb to actually then do the t'other, a really nice place to just relax and have a nice drink. Then I would just head just into the city, about 2 minutes walk from there, a series of little laneways, which are very much like the Melbourne laneways, where a lot of these laneways, certainly when I grew up, were just laneways that you would avoid, because not that Adelaide's at all a dangerous city, but if you were going to find danger, it'd be in these little laneways. Ironically, these little laneways between our city, major city streets now have become very trendy and very in. A lot of those areas have been converted now to cafes that spill out onto the pavement, really have boomed in the last 5-10 years. And two streets that come to mind particularly that I'd recommend anybody visiting, try and visit, because it's a lot of fun choosing which restaurant you'll pick along these lanes, is either Peel Street or Lee Street. Both really beautiful, elegant streets, great cafes, great restaurants. Would you like me to recommend a couple?
Please, please do.
And the thing about a lot of these is I'm always wary because they may not be here in 2 years. That's just
sure,
part
well,
of nature.
Especially this year, but yes.
Yeah. But three that have been there for long enough that I think I can recommend. Peel Street Cafe is a fantastic modern Australian cafe. Modern Australian, I guess, would be very much like having been living in California as I did. If you go to restaurants in Sonoma or okay. those sort of very sort of that sort of food, often small tastings, degustation we call it, where you get some very classy looking food, some very local ingredients. If you're into that sort of thing, the Peel Street Cafe is fantastic. Shibosho makes very fantastic Japanese food with but using local fish, which South Australia is very well known for, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Kafana for Serbian. We had a significant influx of Serbian, Croatian, sadly, after the wars in the mid-90s, a lot of refugees came to Australia and have added really significantly to our cultural mix. So you'll get so many different foods there, but it's a lot of fun to walk along there and just choose the one that you like, the look of yourself. And after that, there's again some fantastic little bars, some downstairs, really hidden away in hidden doors and so on, but there's others on rooftops in those areas too. So a lot of good fun just to walk around and have a drink. So that's a pretty busy day one.
Oh my, that's day one. Okay.
Yeah. So day two, I'd head to the hills. So as I said, we've got the beach on one side, then you've got the city in the middle, and then you've got the hills running parallel to the beach. Now, the hills aren't big. The highest hill is Mount Lofty, which, yeah, looks right across from cities, 730 metres, which will be 2,500 feet, I think. Mm-hmm. We get snow there probably once every 2 years. There's only a couple of places that do get snow in Adelaide, in South Australia, and it's not common.
Okay.
We just don't have the elevation, and we are very dry. But if you are going to get snow, it'll be there. The great thing about the hills is 15-minute drive, you're in the hills from the city centre. I would hire a car and go actually short of the hills and go to the suburbs, a suburb called Morialta. There's a wonderful set of falls there called the Morialta Falls, which is actually three different waterfalls, which you walk one from the other. Very easy access, 15 minutes from the city. Not only are the waterfalls beautiful, they are right in the suburbs, which is, you know, to have a 50-meter or so waterfall and two others behind it, just in your suburbs, is pretty special. But the thing I think that makes it even more special is the wildlife there. Could almost guarantee you'll see wild koalas in the gum trees, which is just fantastic. And our koalas are on steroids compared to the eastern states. The reason I say that, they are massive. I don't think people, if they've ever seen koalas in Sydney and Brisbane, where a lot of them are, they're quite small. Ours haven't been touched by chlamydia. Sadly, chlamydia has been shocking for the koala population in Australia. And other than South Australia, they are dying out. And yet we have a problem that we've got too many of them. And because they're chlamydia free, they're actually able to reach their full size. So they're quite, compared to what most people envisage koalas, they're quite large. So you won't have a problem missing them. You certainly won't have a problem hearing the males, who sound like wild boar. But they are beautiful, and you only have to look up. You almost be guaranteed to see them. The other thing you can almost be guaranteed to see are echidnas, which are, again, another iconic Australian animal. One of the two only monotremes, the mammals that lay eggs, but echidnas, spiny anteaters, is the other name for them. Beautiful, bright orange, spiky marsupials, and you could be guaranteed to see them. Beautiful little animals, the way they waddle, and it's hard to miss one. You'll certainly know when you've seen one. Don't touch them. That beautiful to look at. Not sick.
They look like a porcupine for those of us who are not familiar with the animal. So, yeah, touching them, bad idea.
Except the lay eggs. So it's a very unusual mammal.
Right.
You'll see plenty of different parrots. We have right through from black cockatoos, sulfur-crested cockatoos. From what I can remember, there's about 8 or 9 different types of parrots in our suburbs, and you'll see everyone. So the bird life up there is absolutely beautiful. And look, when you get up to the third waterfall, where it's a bit more remote, kangaroos are often seen. So you should be able to see a lot of the iconic Australian animals in this short walk. It only would take you 3/4 hour to get up to the third falls from the start, from the car park.
That was going to be my next question. Thank you.
Yeah. The first waterfall, which is the largest, is easy access. You can even go with a wheelchair. They've got paths for wheelchairs. After that, it is quite steep.
Okay.
You do need a moderate level of fitness, but you don't need to be super fit. Most people, as long as they haven't got bad knees, will be fine. Bad knees only because it is quite steep coming down.
Okay.
But very well signposted, lots of walks. They do a lot of rock climbing there because the cliffs are quite steep and large. So it's very spectacular orange rock, beautiful area to walk through as well. What I would then do is drive through up to Mount Lofty Summit that I mentioned before. Great place to just sit. There's cafes at the top there where it looks back over the city, over the ocean, and you really do feel like you're just looking straight over the city. Fantastic views day and night time. Just worth a quick look. There is also, next to Mount Lofty Summit, a wildlife park called Cleland. Now, Cleland is the place, if you have a hankering to cuddle a koala, you can actually get one of these large koalas to sit on your shoulder and to get the obligatory photo. It does cost you, I think, $10 for the photo, but you get plenty of time with them. There used to be another park where it was free to get the photo of the koala, but they've obviously caught onto it and they're charging the same as Cleland. So Cleland, it's a great place if you want to see all the Australian animals. It's still a zoo. It's part of the Australia Adelaide Zoo, but it's at the same time, it's quite open. So it's a very nice place to see the animals that you would love to see and get close to them. As I said, you'll be able to pat kangaroos for free. You'll be able to cuddle a koala and see all of those animals that are quite iconic for Australia. The other thing is, if you're a buff or more botanical side, there's the Mount Lofty Botanical Gardens, which is another branch of the Adelaide Botanical Gardens, which is our cold climate botanical gardens. And this time of year, for example, start of spring, we're heading into now beautiful steep hillsides of just covered in azaleas and camellias, and in autumn, the autumn leaves. So Again, beautiful area to walk through, fantastic for photography, and again, free to access again.
You were talking about the zoo being open. The last time, I think the only time I've been in Australia, I've only been there once. We were in a zoo and we were feeding some of the koalas. I think we were actually feeding a wallaby, and one of the people came over and said, "Yeah, that one's not ours. That's a wild one that just gets in." Because apparently with koalas and wallabies, making your fences big enough so that the wild ones stay out and the tame ones stay in is a challenge.
It is, and you do have to be careful with feeding, particularly wild kangaroos. My wife and I went to a mountain range called the Grampians, which are in Victoria, and there was quite a famous place to hand feed wild kangaroos. Mm-hmm. My wife stopped feeding them, and the big male, which was about 6 foot high, wasn't too happy and went for her. She was very lucky. She just got scratched. 2 weeks later, an American tourist was killed by them. Basically got killed. Yeah, got split down the center by their paws. If they go onto their back legs, their tail, and go on their back legs, they can literally, their claws can split you as it did from her breastbone down to her belly. And as a result of that, that tourist attraction was closed.
Oh, my goodness.
I think people, yeah, so kangaroos are, look, we just don't muck around with big males. Big male kangaroos can be very aggressive, not just the reds, which are even more so, the ones that you see boxing. Right. But big greys. If you ever see boxing kangaroos, they're often done in the Adelaide Hills, where we're talking about now, that you'll see definitely see kangaroos in the wild here. They are beautiful animals, and in general, they're safe, but certainly like a lot of big herbivores, and they can get quite big, the proper roos, not the wallabies, they can be dangerous. So what I then hit is the Adelaide Hills is beautiful area of rolling hills, of orchards. We grow a lot of our apples, cherries. You can pick your own fruit there. And there are fantastic wineries. Once again, two of my favorites are Mount Lofty Rangers Vineyard or Pike and Joyce. They both are very close together, got fantastic views of rolling hills, looking across to vineyards on the other side of the hills, and beautiful places for lunch, and quite well priced.
Now, you mentioned the vineyards, and at one point early on, you were saying the German influence. So, but your weather is more Mediterranean, so what style of wines would I find? Would I find more unique wines to Australia, or would I find more of the popular French type of wines, except a Shiraz instead of a Syrah?
Yeah, that's right. So South Australia is very famous for its Shiraz, as you mentioned.
Shiraz in Australia, Syrah here, same wine.
That's right. That would be more famous in the Barossa Valley, which is in about an hour and a half north of Adelaide. Now, it's one of my favorite regions. I live only 20 minutes from there. The reason I'm not talking about it is I think the last couple spoke about it, but it is, if you want to have the big full-bodied reds, like Syrah and Cabernet Sauvignon, the French style, and Grenache, that is definitely from Barossa Valley or McLaren Vale, which we'll be talking about later.
Okay. And that is further inland and warmer, I'm guessing, then?
So the Barossa Valley is an hour and a half from the city due north. We're due east here. McLaren Vale that I'll be talking about later is due south, and that's maritime. It's hilly, but it's where the Adelaide Hills meet the sea. So it's partially hilly. It's hilly, but also it's sort of in between climates. Adelaide Hills is considered cold climate for wines.
Okay.
So you'll find your more elegant reds, Chardonnays, your cold climate Pinot Noir.
Okay.
The great thing about Adelaide is it's got so many different climates around it, so you can really, if you like the more cold climate wines, you'd go to the Adelaide Hills and so on. So you've got a lot of variety around us.
Got it.
I would then head, once you've had your lunch, I'd head to the town of Harndorf, which is, you can imagine, the village of Hahn. Captain Hahn was one of the first captains of one of the boats to arrive from Germany. Now, I could be wrong on that. But Harndorf was founded by the German people who came here in the late 1830s. So only 3 years after South Australia was founded, Harndorf was founded. Very much they picked it because the climate was much more like their homeland. And it is very archetypical German architecture, stonework on the, I've got to be careful how I say it, Fachwerkhäuser, the style of the German homes with the wood, with the beautiful woodwork on the outside.
Half-timbered homes, post and beam.
It is authentic. I will say it's very touristy. A lot of tourists go there, but the buildings are authentic. It's not a fake village. This is how it was. My wife's mother grew up there. She's a German girl, my wife, and she was brought up there. And again, fantastic wineries in the town. It's a great town just to wander up and down the main street for the architecture, the wineries, the cafes with the German cakes, really good coffee, great place to buy gifts and souvenirs as well. There's microbreweries there too. Adelaide Hills are full of microbreweries as well. So if you prefer beer over the wine, you've got plenty of options. There's also a lot of distilleries which are making lots of different gins. So there's pretty much everything for anybody who likes alcohol, but the food is good as well. You can probably guess there's a theme with South Australians. We're quite notorious for our – we're quite famous or infamous, depending on how you look at it, for our love for good wine.
Oh, yeah. And one clarification there, just you were really close, but Dirk Hahn was actually a Danish captain.
Really?
It is a German settlement, okay. But it was named after a Danish captain. But the borders there were not as hard and fast as we sometimes think. And then you mentioned Fachwerk, and that's actually the German word for truss. And so you can sort of picture that when you see these buildings that have this post and beam construction, this half-timbered houses, you can kind of see the truss work out on the outside of the building. And so that's apparently where the name comes from, which I did not know.
Oh, there you go. Fantastic. And thank you. I didn't know. I'll go home and tell my wife that it wasn't actually a German settler. Captain Hahn was Danish. So I would finish off by driving back to the city on the expressway, which only takes you 30 minutes. That's a great thing. We're not far from the city still.
Right.
And I would then catch the tram. This one does cost money. You can either catch the tram and go to Glenelg to visit one of our beaches. Glenelg's probably the most famous beach of Adelaide. It's our equivalent. I say equivalent. It's nothing as crazily busy, or the waves aren't a tenth as scary as Bondi in Sydney. But it's our go-to beach for tourists. Now, I'm purposely going to tell you don't go there. What I would rather recommend is people to go, well, because there's tourists and you're going to be with everybody else. It's a nice beach and it's got easy access. But if you've got a hire car, Grange is just as close, or Semaphore. And it's one row of beach. Like I said, it's 50 kilometres of an unbroken beach. Grange is my favourite because it's a lot quieter. Really good cafes, and one of my favourite places to eat there is the Grange Jetty Kiosk. Kiosk makes it sound like it's very simple, but it's not. It's a beautiful little restaurant overlooking the water, right on the sand, overlooking the jetty, the wharf, and it's a great place to experience an Adelaide sunset with the white sand and the colours changing as the sun sets, particularly if you get some clouds. It's just stunning. And that's where you can experience the seafood, which South Australia is really well known for. Three things that probably we're the most well known for are our prawns, or I think the Americans call them shrimps.
Mm-hmm. We use prawn as well. We use prawn for larger shrimp.
Okay. Oh, well, no, that would fit. So, yeah, Spencer Gulf prawns are large, the size of your hand,
right?
In terms of length. So that would fit then. Coffin Bay oysters. South Australia's probably got what we think are the best oysters, at least in Australia, from the Eyre Peninsula, called Coffin or Smoky Bay oysters. Absolutely beautiful oysters, which are definitely worth sampling because they're coming so fresh. And the other thing is King George whiting, which is a fish that's caught off the coast that you're looking at. And the King George whiting's a beautiful eating fish, which is, as I said, it's nice to be able to know that you're eating something which just caught off the beach that you were just at, and is a very well-known eating fish. Yeah, and just sit there and watch the sunset with a glass of good Riesling from the Clare Valley, which is another northern wine region where having that with your seafood's pretty a fun way to finish. Day three, I would head down to the Fleury Open.
Just so you know, from a time check, we're probably going to need to speed up just a little bit.
Okay. Well, so I'll go through day three quickly. Day three, Fleury Peninsula. Fleury Peninsula is the peninsula which is south of Adelaide, which has the McLaren Vale wine region, and also some stunning surf beaches. Our beaches in Adelaide are beautiful white sand beaches with sunsets, large tracts of sand, but there is never a wave unless there's a winter storm. It's a great place for kids to swim, as long as there's no great whites out in the water, which does happen occasionally where we live. We're the home of great white sharks. But in my whole life, I've never seen one. So, and I've been to the beach plenty of times.
And we should pause here for a second, because some people have heard the stories about how dangerous Australia can be, because there's great white sharks and there's crocodiles, not in this region, and there's tunnel web spiders and box jellyfish. I will tell you that more people are killed in a single year by one animal in Australia than the sum total of people killed by sharks, snakes, tunnel web spiders, box jellyfish, and crocodiles. And that animal is a bee. So more people, very venomous snakes since antivenom was invented. And more people are killed also in every given year by accidents with vending machines.
Well, that's good to know. We don't have many vending machines. So
be careful with the vending machine. And don't worry too much about the great white sharks.
We do have plenty of the most dangerous snakes on Earth in Adelaide, right, in the suburbs. Brown snakes, which I think are number two or three. Tiger snakes, red belly snakes, which are beautiful. If you see a red belly snake, they are beautiful. And I've seen a couple in the hills, but 99% of the time I've seen them, as soon as they see us, they'll scatter away. It's only one big brown that was determined. Just, it was a large brown snake, was nearly 10 foot long, the largest one I've ever seen. And it did not want to move, so I just left it. I thought, no, I'm not. I took a photo and decided I'd move on. We don't get funnel webs, but we do get redback spiders commonly in our backyards. Hanging. Redbacks are also beautiful looking. They look like black widows, but with a red cross on their back. Mm-hmm. And they are highly poisonous. They won't kill you unless you're very sick already. But you'd get bitten by one, you are very sick for a long time. But we don't get crocs, no, thankfully. But down south, you've got the fantastic surf coast. Down the south coast, you'll see southern right whales, which are one of the largest whales on the world. You can see them from Victor Harbour, which I'd recommend is a great place to go down and spend the best part of your day, Victor Harbour and Port Elliot. You'll see down there, if you may be lucky to see in the right season, the southern rights just off in the harbour where you're looking. And southern rights are massive. They're 15 metres long.
Oh, my.
A bit bigger than even humpbacks. Very large animals. You'll see a lot more of them in the west coast of South Australia. We've seen literally 30 in one watching in the west coast, but even in the south coast here, you'll see them. You will see penguins if you go to Little Granite Island. Granite Island is an island just off the coast of Victor Harbour. You walk across a causeway and it's a beautiful little island with cliffs, spectacular coast, and you may see New Zealand fur seals. You also got a good chance of seeing little penguins there, which are very cute, very beautiful. Sadly, there's nowhere near as many as when I was a kid. When I was a kid, they were everywhere. They are becoming rarer and rarer thanks to the fur seals, which is a dilemma for the ecology because this New Zealand fur seals, Victor Harbour was originally a seal. It was created to actually get the oil and the meat from the seals back in the 1830s, 1840s. When they were killed, the little penguins started to thrive. But obviously, thankfully, we've been much more sensitive and now we don't kill the fur seals for the last 50 years. So the fur seals are coming in and their favourite food is little penguins. So it's a real ecological dilemma. Do you kill the fur seals, which were there before the penguins, to keep the penguin population up, or what do you do? So it's an ongoing ecological dilemma to work out what they're doing at the moment. There are still enough little penguins to survive, but it certainly is changing. So I don't know how long they're going to be here for, which is a shame. Also down the south is a beautiful steam train. If anybody's a steam train enthusiast, called the cockle train. Cockles are a clam which you can collect on the beach and eat down there. They just wash up on the beach and are really nice and tasty. But the cockle train is a steam train that runs from Victor Harbour to Goolwa. Goolwa is the mouth of the Murray, which is our largest river in Australia. It's very similar to your Mississippi in terms of size, and it's where the Murray meets the sea. So it's a beautiful trip along the coast. It follows the coast the whole way. And so the whole, right as you're going to Goolwa, you'll see surf coast the whole way and cliffs. If you like steam trains, it's a fantastic little train to do. My other favourite thing down there is to go to Port Elliot, which is a tourist town on a crescent-shaped beach called Horseshoe Bay, and do some fantastic little cliff walks to look at all the surfers catching waves, and it is a beautiful coast. It's cold. The one thing I will say, we have very warm summers, often reaching summer. I think the average temperature in January is 30 degrees, which you might know the conversion, Chris, better than I would.
40 is 100, so 30 is in the 80s.
So that's about a standard day, but we do have extreme days that could get to, the hottest day we've ever had is 47. That was 2 years ago. That's rare. That is hot. But you will get in January and February probably 2 or 3 days in the hundreds, in your 100 Fahrenheit. Mm. So in the 40s. So it does get hot. But even when it's hot, because we're coming off our ocean is the Southern Ocean,
right,
coming straight off the Antarctic, it can be quite chilly. In the heart of summer, it can become tolerable, but just beware down south, even in the hot heat of summer, most people have got wetsuits to go surfing.
Sure, I get that. Same here.
Yeah, it is. I can remember how cold it was in the north of California. It was not warm.
No,
the beaches.
Not at all.
I then head to McLaren Vale on the way back, which is another wine region that I mentioned, sort of half maritime, half dry. So you get a lot of great Cabernet Sauvignons and Grenaches there. There's some fantastic wineries. One that I'd say is probably the most unique one to look at is called Darenberg. Darenberg has a unique piece of art called The Cube. And it is what it sounds like. It's a 3 or 4 story building. It looks like a cube. And inside it, it's different levels. There's what they call an alternate realities museum. There's a very cool cellar door. The wines are good too there. But it is a very intriguing piece of artwork. Quite out there, but a lot of fun to see. But there are so many other more conventional wineries as well down there that I love, like Chapel Hill, Beach Row, because it goes to the beach. And again, beautiful views, very typical wine region, great restaurants to go with it. And I'd head back to dinner in the city. I'd recommend going to our Chinatown, where, again, you're going to expose to a lot of the Asian influence of South Australia, which, because of the Vietnam War, we had a lot of refugees, Southern Vietnamese, come to Adelaide. So you get the best of Vietnamese cuisine here, as well as the more older Chinese, because Chinese came here for the gold mining and the mining here back in the 19th century. So there's a lot of Chinese influence, but a lot further back. So you get a lot of Asian, great Asian restaurants down there. The last 3 days I'd recommend.
Actually, before we get there, just one small correction. We talked about the fur seals. The fur seals were hunted for their fur.
Oh, well, there's not much fur to them.
But their fur was highly prized.
Oh, there you go.
So it was fur hats and things like that was what nearly hunted fur seals into extinction for a while.
I'm learning a lot from you. Thanks.
That's
thanks
all right. For this. And that's why they were called that, is that was their defining characteristic.
Well, that makes sense, though, but I didn't realize that. Thanks for that.
That's all right.
So I then head to the Flinders Ranges. Flinders Ranges are continuous with the Adelaide Hills. The Adelaide Hills go right down to Kangaroo Island, right up to the centre or high north of South Australia. Flinders Ranges is one of the largest ranges in Australia. It goes south-north, I think it's about 600 kilometres, so it's a large range, and there is plenty of parts that you can visit. What I'm going to recommend is just two of the areas that are the easiest access. The rest of it will need four-wheel drive, and it's a fantastic place if you love really true outback. And this is really where you start to go outback. The Flinders Ranges go from being this lush green area in the south right up to desert ranges in the north, which it's a very varied scene. One of the great things about it, again, is the wildlife. You'll see kangaroos right from the big reds to greys, euros, which are sort of the largest wallaby, right through the beautiful, rare, very rare rock wallabies. The rock wallabies are absolutely beautiful, massive long tails, and very rare, and live in the rocky components of the Flinders. And if you see them, you're very lucky. I mean, I've been very lucky to have them right near me, but they're the most beautiful, elusive animals. The other things, as well as the kangaroos and the goannas, the large, really large lizards that you hopefully will see prolifically, is the wedge-tailed eagles, which are probably one of my favourite birds. I think they're the third largest raptor on Earth. Absolutely regal animals. Their wingspan's over 9 foot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they are massive and just beautiful-looking animals. There wouldn't be a time you won't see them, but when you do, you'll certainly know they are just stunning. The other bird you'll see is the flightless bird. You can be 100% guaranteed you'll see many, many emus, which are behind only ostrich for size. And so you'll see a lot of the iconic Australian animals again, as well as the scenery being, as I said before, I think when I introduced about why Adelaide, Flinders Ranges, I took some friends of mine from Texas and they said, this is what we thought Australia would be looking like. They'd been to Queensland, it was tropical. So what you're now seeing is very much the brown earth. I mean, in winter it can be green, but you'll see the brown earth, the red rock. the wildlife, and you won't see many people. There are tourists who go to the Flinders Ranges, but it's one of those hidden gems of Australia. And I am biased, but having travelled the world, I still think there's not many places with such beautiful scenery. The stars, it's one of the best places in the world to see stars at night because it's so low population. Mm-hmm. So I think you'll see it's a great opportunity to really be out back, have log fires, bring some of those wines you brought up, have a red wine over a log fire. It's a pretty special place to do that, as well as some absolutely brilliant bushwalking. Where I'd start was Melrose. Melrose is 3.5 hours north of Adelaide. What I would do at Melrose is it's at the foot of Mount Remarkable, which is a beautiful southern part of the Flinders. The mountain there is about 3,000-3,500 feet. But it's a nice place to walk. But what's really special is one part of the Mount Remarkable National Park is called Alligator Gorge. There are no alligators. We don't have alligators in Australia. I'm not sure why they called it that. But what I can say, we have crocs, but we don't have any alligators.
Sure, right, but not where you are.
And definitely not where we are, no. But Alligator Gorge is a beautiful, one of my favorite places to show people. It's very steep. You know, I guess in America, you'd call it probably more a canyon.
Okay.
Bright orange, red rock. You can walk right through it, unless they're, depending on the time of year, if you come in winter, there might be water in it with small waterfalls, but you can, I've had to wade knee deep sometimes in the water, which is freezing, but it's stunning to walk through it. If you go in the heart of summer, there'll be no water. You can be lucky or unlucky, but it is even more spectacular when there is some water and you get the reflections of the bright orange cliffs on each side. It's certainly worth walking. Great walk there. Great mountain biking in that area as well. The next day, day five, I'd head up to Corn, Q-U-O-R-N. Corn is about 45 minutes north. It's a very old, it's got classic Australian streetscapes. They use it a lot for films. They film because it looks like it's you're stepping back into the 19th century or early 20th century. They used it for Gallipoli with Mel Gibson.
Okay.
The Water Diviner, they used Russell Crowe's movie, The Water Diviner, was filmed there. What Corn's claim to fame is the Pitchy Ritchie Steam Railway, which is part of the old GAN. The GAN was the railway that went from Adelaide to Darwin, which really joined the nation. It's a 19th century narrow gauge railway. I'm not obsessed with railways, but these two are absolutely beautiful steam railways.
I'm a railway fan. You don't need to apologize for this.
Oh, the Pitchy Ritchie is stunning. It's through the mountains and just being on a narrow gauge, the old steam trains, the quality of the trains, how well they're looked after given their age is just phenomenal. And they have fantastic scones and pumpkin scones that they make there with their Kwandong jam. Kwandongs are a native peach.
Okay.
It's like a peach with a bit of bitterness in it. Makes a beautiful jam. But if you're ever in Corn, make sure, even if you don't go on the Pitchy Ritchie, you go to one of the cafes and get their famous scones with Kwandong jam. It's certainly a beautiful jam. And it's unique fruit of Australia, particularly where we are. And I'd finish off the day driving up to Wilpena Pound, which your friends mentioned, but they didn't actually talk about it. Wilpena Pound is about an hour and a half from Corn. It's part of the Ikara, which is the Aboriginal word for Flinders Ranges, I-K-A-R-A, Flinders Ranges National Park. I would stay there.
So this is a resort?
Well, the resort's in the national park. You can stay at the Wilpena Pound Resort, and you're right in the heart of it. If you're looking for something slightly more upmarket, Rawnsley Park is also in the national park, but it's a private sheep station that is now mainly tourism, and that's got lodges that actually have the roof is clear, it's glass, so when you're sleeping at night, you're looking up and you're seeing the most amazing stars. Very unique, obviously a little bit more glam than Wilpena Pound Resort, which is very nice. The good thing about Wilpena Pound Resort is you can camp there if you haven't got much money, or you can stay in one of the lodges. Where we stay in Luka is our favourite place to stay up there. Is a place called Upalina Station, U-P-A-L-I-N-N-A Station, which is a sheep station just outside of the national park. It's a old farmhouse that you rent on your own. The best thing about it is there's a ridge behind it that we would go up, my wife and I, every morning and every night because we love walking and we love photography. And we'd either watch the sun set over the pound or we'd watch it rise behind us, reflecting on the pound. We'd always take our red wine at sunset, not sunrise, and have a sunset picnic watching the sunset there. Just absolutely glorious. Upalina Station is a fantastic, unique place. And there are a lot of those up in the Flinders where you can rent old sheep station accommodation, and it's a lot of fun. But if you want to be in the heart of it, the Wilpena Pound Resort is good too.
One word of clarification. When you say overlooking the pound, you're using a word that I know, but not in a way that I know how to use it. So,
sure. Sorry. Yeah, it's just, so Wilpena Pound is... So it looks like a crater has hit it. Now, it's not a crater. I know your friend said they thought the rumor was it was a crater. They've proven it's not a crater.
Got it.
But if you can imagine a massive meteor has come down, I say massive because it's basically a depression surrounded by a ring of mountains.
Okay.
A perfect ring of mountains. Now, these mountains are the largest in the Flinders. They get up to about 1,200 meters. So that's roughly just around 4,000 feet. And they come straight off the plane, so they're quite dramatic, very jagged. It does literally look like a meteor has hit it. There is some phenomenon that's created this shape, but it's more a geological. I'm not a geologist, but it's a geological reason rather than a meteor. But you could swear it's a meteor. And when you go up, what I would recommend is to get a scenic flight over the pound and over the surrounding other mountain ranges, the Flinders there at sunset. It's just spectacular seeing the geology in front of you, fold upon fold of different colors of rock in the mountains. You know, you get pinks, oranges, yellows. The rock there is just absolutely stunning as a result, and nothing, I think, better than seeing it from the sky. It's about an hour, and look, it's very good value for what you're getting. It's one of the most beautiful flights you'd ever see over the surrounding ranges. I'd finish off with either a sunset. Flinders are famous for the sunset on the rock. At either Arkaroo Rock. Arkaroo Rock is one of the hills, one of the mountains that form the pound. The good thing about Arkaroo Rock is, which adds to the value of it, is it's actually many, many old indigenous rock art paintings in there, which really adds to not only watching a beautiful sunset with mountains, you get to see Aboriginal rock art as well. If you're lucky enough to stay in Upolina Station, where we stayed, as I said, we just sat on the rocks and watched the sunset. It was almost perfection. As I said, stargazing up there is great. Your sixth day, I'd go to actually spend in the pound. What I'd recommend is doing a full-day hike to St. Mary's Peak. St. Mary's Peak is the highest mountain in the Flinders. As I said, it's just shy of 1,200 metres, 4,000 feet. I have gone up there. It's about a 9 to 12-hour hike. It's a full day. It is not easy. You have to be fit. There are parts, they have a very well signposted path, and sometimes you think you're lost, but it's because you're looking at, you realize the arrows are pointing upwards, not forwards, because you're having to climb up rock.
Okay.
A few people have died over the years, including one of our premiers, which is our state governor. His brother died there about 20 years ago, sadly, but it's not common. It is a, I'm not saying it's safe, but if you just take it carefully and slowly over some of those very steep parts, it is an absolutely beautiful walk. Very recently, and I don't know how recent, but last year when we went, we were requested no longer to climb the summit out of the respect of the local Aboriginal tribe who are now saying that it's actually a sacred spot, which we didn't know when we climbed the summit many times as a child and since. They tell you I need to go to a place called the Tandera Saddle, which is just before you do the vertical climb. So it's actually, for people who are nervous about rock climbing, going up to the saddle is just steep, but you won't have to clamber up rocks. And it's still worth getting up to the saddle because the views into the pound, which looks like a meteorite has hit, and back over the ranges the other way are just nothing short of magnificent. If you don't want to do such a hard walk, there's two other mountains in the pound, that ring of mountains. One's called Mount Olsen Bag or Rawnsley Bluff. Both of those are hard walks, but they're not as high. They only get to 950 metres, so roughly about 3,000 feet. Still hard walks, but 1,000 feet less, and they'll only take you 5 or 6 hours return. And I'd finish with sunset at Stokes Hill Lookout. Seventh day and the last day, you get the car and go through Akara Flinders Ranger National Park by car because some of the roads, the drives there are just absolutely stunning. I would go to the Bunyaroo Gorge, which starts as a bitumen road, but then turns off and you go onto a dirt road. Now, interestingly, all of the guidebooks tell you that you should take a four-wheel drive. I've been going up to this region since I was a kid because my family grew up in this. I grew up in this area. We've never used a four-wheel drive. You don't need a four-wheel drive. As long as you drive carefully to the road conditions and there's no massive hasn't been a big rainfall prior to you going, it is very safe. The only reason I say about massive rainfall prior is many of these creeks are ephemeral creeks. They are often dry, but you can get flash flooding. And also you can get these creeks when they do flow, like a lot of desert areas, can become torrents of water. But common sense prevails. If you see rapid flowing water, I wouldn't cross it. But in all my times I've done the Flinders, I've done two-wheel drive on this road and never had a problem. When you do the creek crossings, just go slowly. And if you're nervous, just ask somebody before. Look to see what they're doing, what path they're taking to go across the creek. But the roads are reasonably safe. I've never had a problem. So Bunyaree Gorge Scenic Drive is where you'll see all those rock wallabies, the euros, which are not the European dollar. Our euros are sort of the largest form of wallaby, your big reds, your wedge-tailed eagles, your emus. And there's two fantastic lookouts, Bunyaree Valley Lookout and Razorback Lookout. If you were ever to see a tourism brochure for South Australia, if you didn't see wineries, you'd see Razorback Lookout. It's sort of an iconic view of the Flinders Ranges, looking back over the Pound, looking over the Mount St. Mary's Peak, where you'd climbed the day before, over all these jagged pyramidal peaks and rounded hills as well. It's a beautiful lookout, beautiful area to drive through. Then you'd go down the top here, descend into the gorge, and you'd go through to Brachner Gorge. Now, Brachner Gorge is famous for a couple of particular reasons. Firstly, its mountains, beautiful. You've got 400 or 500 meter bright red cliffs coming off the creek. Beautiful area for photography. Again, wildlife is huge. Lots of rock wallabies in those jagged red rock gorges. But what it's most famous for is its fossils. The oldest fossils on Earth are found there. That's 600 million year old fossils called Ediacaran, which is Ediacaran was the time of the world 600 million years ago, stromatolites. So if you go off, park your car off the side and just go walk towards these Red Rock Canyon is, and actually look at the canyon, you can almost be guaranteed to see fossils in the rock. They're still researching them regularly because they are, as I said, the oldest fossils on Earth. I think there's the same age group. There's some in America as well, but I think the Brachner has probably got the largest deposit of easily accessible Ediacaran fossils on Earth. So not only is it stunning scenery, there's some amazing, very old history. I would then follow the end of Brachner Gorge to Parachilna. Parachilna's got a very well-known hotel, very old hotel called the Prairie. Prairie is famous for its feral, they call it feral food, where you can get emu egg omelets, you can get kangaroo tail soup, camel sirloin. So all of the animals that we get up in the Flinders, I've had all of those. I've had kangaroo, camel, emu. I've had crocodile, but not in South Australia. And it is fun to try, and the food is, it might sound weird, but it is fantastic food there. Well worth it. People will literally fly in from the eastern states just to eat at this place. It's well worth, but you need to pre-book. It's not expensive, but it's very remote. And so you would need to book. You don't want to get there and be disappointed, because the next place to eat would probably be a two-hour drive.
I was going to say.
And I'd finish off going back to your place of accommodation in Wilpena Pound via Morilana Scenic Drive, which is takes you back off this road, back to there on the south side of the Pound. So Bunyaree and Brachner take you on the north side of the Pound, and Morilana Scenic Drive takes you back on the south side of the Pound. So you're doing a complete ring of that ring of mountains. And it takes you between the Pound itself and the Elder Range, which also have very steep, dramatic mountains. Large native pines, Red River gums, which are another iconic part of the Flinders, are our gum trees there. The Red River gums are often painted by artists because the gums are absolutely massive. They're not massive as in height, but massive in girth. Beautiful looking trees, and certainly adds to the scene.
Well, and for those from the U.S., when he says gum tree, we think eucalyptus. So
that's right.
Same tree, different name.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be the 7 days, Chris. Hopefully I sped
through.
Well,
I think we've gone for a record on the length of this episode.
Sorry.
But it's all interesting, so I didn't want to cut you off. But I do want to start wrapping it up.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's it for me.
You are standing in the prettiest spot in all South Australia, where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Oh, for me, it's the Razorback Lookout that I mentioned in Bunyaroo Valley. It encapsulates everything I love about our state, the mountains, and if you're lucky, you might even see some wildlife there. That, to me, is just picture perfect.
Well, and I was checking off the things that you told me you were going to tell me at the beginning and the things you told me, and the one thing we didn't talk about was festivals.
Yes, so sorry about that. So the great time to come to Adelaide is March. We actually call it Mad March, because everything happens in March in Adelaide. March is our start of our autumn, of your fall.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The weather, we still have daylight savings, so we still have long evenings, though the sun won't set till 8:30. The weather is beautiful, often about 25, 30 degrees, so 70 to 80 degrees Fahrenheit. And it's when all the festivals have. So we have WOMAD, which is our World Music Festival, which is, we've had people, Peter Gabriel used to be in charge of WOMAD. So WOMAD, they get world music from literally all around the world. That's, and we have it in our Botanic Park, well, not Botanic Gardens, Botanic Park, where, you know, amongst all the old eucalyptus. The Fringe Festival is probably what we're most well known for. It's the second largest festival in the world behind Edinburgh in Scotland, which is full of art and comedians, everything you can imagine, weird circus acts. And they often have them in with a lot of street food as well. And it's all through different venues in the city. A lot of fun. We have also at the same time the festival, which is more the serious end of art. The Fringe was actually what it meant. It was actually just went alongside the festival, but now the Fringe has sort of overtaken the festival, but they occur at the same time. Hmm. So that all occur within a week of each other. WOMAD, the Fringe, and the festival, which is why we call it Mad March, because it is full on. The city is a buzz. It's a lot of fun. As I said, warm weather, but not too hot. Beautiful evenings and lots of great outdoor entertainment, food, shows. It goes for about 4 weeks, and it's a lot of fun.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh, and say only in Adelaide, only in South Australia.
We always have a chip on our shoulder, the East Coast say. I think we always are having to fight for our little bit of turf in Australia, because I think, and you'll hear that when you have people come here, we always want to know, what do you think of Adelaide? What do you think of Flinders? Because we're always hoping you'll say you'll love it. I think we just feel like we're the long-lost cousin of Australia. We certainly haven't got the tourist numbers of the others, so I guarantee you somebody will ask you, what do you think of Australia? What do you think of Adelaide?
That's funny.
The other thing is, not that it's a great claim to fame, but one of our culinary, I won't say delicacies, is the pie floater. It's that when we talk about, have you tried a pie floater? Do you know what a pie floater is?
I have no idea.
Okay. So it's a meat pie, which is tipped upside down into a bowl of hot pea and ham soup.
Okay.
So it floats in the pea and ham soup, and then you drown the top of the pie with ketchup.
Okay.
It's one of those things you'd have after a big night of drinking.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
But it seems it's an iconic South Australian dish. So if you're brave enough, try a pie floater if you ever come to Adelaide in one of the pie carts, which are street food.
Got it. And if you had to summarize the region in just three words, what three words are you going to use?
Outback.
Okay.
Sophisticated.
Okay.
Wine.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, James, our guest again, is James Schomburg. And James, you don't have a website that we're going to send people to, about travel, that is, per se. Yeah. But you did want to send people to your Instagram, where we can find photos of your travel.
Yeah, could I send that to you, the details of the Instagram account, Chris?
Absolutely. We'll put it in the show notes. So if you check out the show notes, there's going to be a lot of information that James told us that we've got links for. So check those out either in the lyrics of this episode, as always, or on the website. James, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Adelaide and for South Australia.
Thanks so much, Chris. Sorry it went for so long, but I love talking about my state. Thank you.
Thanks, as always, to those who support this show through Patreon. which helps defray some of the regular expenses of the show, such as editing it and hosting it and those sorts of things. And a special thanks this time to Jeff Hedges, who became our latest patron. If you're also interested in supporting the show, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. And then I've got a little bit of an apology. I'd like to reach out to Reno or Rhino. I'm not sure how to pronounce your name. When you tried to join the Amateur Traveler Trips group, which is amateurtraveler.com/trips, I pressed the wrong button and deleted you instead of added you. So if you could go and try and add yourself again, I will try and press the right button this time. My apologies. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.